Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 278. And I'm joined this week by the wonderful Connie Huck. Thank you for joining in, guys. How is everyone? I hope you've all had a wonderful weekend and week so far. Yeah, thank you for all the love for the recent episodes. I'm going to keep this intro brief because the conversation is frankly fantastic. It's one of my favourites. I met Connie, we'll discuss it, but I'll say briefly, I met Connie properly when I did her Switch Off podcast, and after we finished recording it, we decided that we had to do a Distraction Pieces ASAP because we were pretty sure that we could fix the world. And we have a good go at it, but I won't go into too much detail. I'll tell you as ever, you can support the podcast for just a dollar at patreon.com/scroobiouspip. And there's speechdevelopmentrecords.com has got tons of merch and everything. My club night is back on July 27th. So come along to that. We've got Russell from Block Party DJing. So that's exciting. And yeah, I'll come back at the end with some more information because I want to tell you about a comedy gig I went to this week. And a few other bits, who's next week, who's next week's guest, all things like that. But I'm saving that for the end because I want to start, I'm experimenting with shorter intros. I will in the intro mention that really briefly at the end, we get talking about Connie's book, upcoming book, Cookie and the Most Annoying Boy in the World. And I couldn't remember if we said the name or not. So I wanted to give it a mention and a plug here, because that's out next month. Anyway, this is episode 278 of the Distraction Pieces Podcast with the wonderful Connie Huck. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. That recording, I always do a backup recording as well now.
That's
because
good.
I had one that didn't record, and weirdly, when I was recording with Charlie earlier in the week, a minute into our conversation, I noticed it wasn't recording here because I hadn't switched on that box.
Right,
okay. And it was beautiful to have the relaxation of I've got it backed up
and got it covered.
It's not a problem.
Cool.
So I'm here today with Connie Huck. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you for welcoming me to your house. I'm late.
It's a pleasure. I'm sorry I couldn't deal with the weather. It's absolutely torrential out there, isn't it?
I was thinking on the way over, it's the most cliched and British thing to talk about weather, but how mad is the weather today? It's literally, I left the house and it was sunny, and then at points it felt as if I was going to have to pull over because the rain was so heavy.
Where you can't see, yeah. Anyway, sorry, you're right. It's not like...
No, but it's weird. When that happens, I was at home the other day and it was literally for under a minute, it was as if someone had emptied a bucket on my house. Yeah. It was the heavy... It didn't feel like raindrops. It felt like a flow of water. And then it stopped.
Yeah.
So we've kind of killed the planet, I'd imagine.
I think it's pretty much a goner. Unless we just change everything.
Yeah, that's doable. I saw a tweet.
Do you think it's doable?
I think it is. I saw a tweet today and they said, because of our need to blame people and shame people, we've made it seem as if all of our problems are insurmountable. Because we're so, oh, you've ruined the planet. Oh, you've done this, you've done that. It's like, their point was, there's loads that can be done. It has to be done by countries and by companies, but individuals can make a difference as well.
They really can.
And it's mad. I think anything, quick change can come if business people can see it as financially beneficial.
Yeah.
It's genuinely why I think, as much as it's a positive thing, I think the huge push for more Black and Asian representation in film, more female representation in film, that's all got bigger because they've seen there's money in it now. Because they can go, oh, Wonder Woman. And Captain Marvel, it's feminist, it's female, or Black Panther. There's money in it now. So, it's still a good result, so I'm not hating on it, but stuff happens a lot quicker, I think, as soon as there's a financial reason for it to be so.
Yeah, definitely in today's society, like, everything is financially driven because people think happiness comes through helping themselves.
Yeah.
Because that's how we're brought up. You know, that is the sort of capitalist consumerist society we live in. But you could have a shift, and I think it would have to come from the bottom, where, like, if kids think that altruism, like helping each other, is what brings happiness, people only want to be happy in real life.
Yeah.
And that's all you can want. If you're happy and homeless, but you're depressed and you're loaded, the homeless person's winning, because happiness is the ultimate goal. But, like, if there was a mentality shift at the bottom where you didn't even gain your happiness through all the sort of, I don't know, material goods or the, you know, making more and more money, then that, I think that's the only hope. So kids are going to be world leaders of tomorrow. They're going to be the CEOs in companies. And if they innately, because by the time we're in our late 20s, we've stopped shaping. Yeah. Like, it takes years of therapy to undo all that stuff in our brain. If already in your upbringing or your childhood or something, that is your mindset and your mentality giving back. And it's not even like, oh, you're so nice. It's just the norm.
Yeah.
Then everyone will be like that. So then if they are the president of the USA or they are a CEO, they won't feel the need to, oh, let's increase that fat cat salary from 10 million to 20 million. Or they won't feel the need to go offshore for taxes or, you know, because they'll want to sort of increase the pay of the workers or give to charity.
Yeah.
Because it's just in their mentality.
It's something that people struggle with, I think, because, again, we've built a society that's so built on instant gratification or instant results. So knowing that it will take a generation, people are like, we need to do it now.
Yeah,
and it's similar in the other the direction. People will have that nan or that uncle or whoever who's racist, who's homophobic. And at this stage, they're not going to change. And the fact is, they just have to die. And that sounds harsh and horrible, but they do just have to die. They're going to have to die, and then the focus has to be on the next people.
But in life, you know, if you think back to the Stone Ages, you know, there was a totally different mentality than now, and people's minds shift and their mentality shifts. And I don't know, you take something like the smoking ban, and people fought it and resisted it. Non-smokers and smokers alike.
Remember how big a deal it was?
Yes, these people will be second-rate citizens smoking outside on the street corners, blah blah blah. And the minute you change something at the root, then it's just the perceived norm, and people accept it and they embrace it, and you don't, you know,
so quickly.
It's not
as well
a thing.
It was
so
mad
quickly.
How quick the smoking ban's the perfect example, because that's something that's happened in our lifetime that was a huge change. That's across the country, a real big change, and like that it was it was fine.
I have, like, really thick dark hair. I remember just any time I went out, I'd, like, come back. My hair, like, absorbs. It's really dry as well. It absorbs odours and fumes. And, like, if I literally put a drinking straw to a glass of water from my hair, I'd probably drink it up. It just seems to, like, suck everything
in.
And it changed my life. I didn't just go around stinking.
You see, it depends where you were going as well, because at that point I was touring. I literally remember I was touring in Europe, so I went to Europe before the smoking ban and came back with the smoking ban in place, and Europe didn't have it. It was France. It was do anything. So it was weird to come back. But at that point, obviously I was gigging a lot and I was not going out to clubs necessarily, but sometimes I was DJing in clubs and stuff like that. And the smoking ban revealed that humans are smelly because in clubs it's hot and it's sweaty. And we hadn't noticed that before because there was that layer of smoke to cover it up. You're suddenly like, oh, this is another thing. Like, this is unavoidable.
Cigarettes is now replaced by eau de BO.
And it's, again, it's acceptable. It's a natural part of humans. But for the first few months, I know all my mates who were club promoters were like, it's disgusting. And again, everything, you get used to it and it's not a big deal. But yeah, it was an interesting one to go, was covering something up, wasn't it?
I remember I used to get sore throats as well. Or if I'd been out the night before in a smoky environment, I've got like nodules in my throat.
Right.
I need to learn to speak from my abdomen, but I speak from my throat. I need to do the Alexander technique. But I used to regularly lose my voice. And then the minute the smoking ban came in, my voice was like a normal person's voice. So I didn't have to go around talking like Marge Simpson's sister every morning after a night before.
I mean, it's interesting kind of looking at the problems in the world. And I came on your podcast recently, your switch off podcast.
Yeah.
And it was great because instantly we both wanted to talk for hours and hours and hours because we're both clearly very excitable people who've got similar ideas and outlooks. But your podcast is like a professional one and stuff. So, you know, we had to rein ourselves in a little bit.
I know, it is a bit like that because I'm one of these people.
And it's what I'm used to on mine, just being a long, rambly podcast. Yeah, but because it's on BBC Sounds and all this, it's very much...
Yeah, and you have to stay quite focused and to the theme, which I find really difficult. I just go off on tangents. Whenever I speak to people, you know, I'll start talking about one thing and by the end... Like, I'll come away thinking, oh, I never finished that. Or I've left all these sort of things hanging in the air because I've gone off on tangents, like random sort of sentences that now make no sense.
I'll have people tweet all the time saying, are you guys were going on a really good direction and then you just completely changed and never came back to it. Yeah. I was waiting the whole time for you to finish this one story. It's like, oh, yeah. I forgot we started on that. I've literally come away from,
I don't know, dinner parties, that sounds posh, but, you know, gatherings where people talk, I don't know the right word for it, functions,
yes.
Where I realised that I never got to the end of that anecdote or whatever, and actually it's such a weird anecdote just told as it is without...
Just about the end point, the thing that justifies it together.
Yeah, and makes it relevant to the bigger conversation or whatever.
Doug Stanhope is a comedian I absolutely adore, and so much of his stuff, if you stopped him halfway through, it would be horrific. he'll start with the really horrific bit to give the payoff of here's the end of the story, and I always worry about that in general conversations because often you'll get in weird situations or weird events that will start off sounding horrible, but then how it's resolved is what brings it back round. And that's the fear of podcasts, is the bit that makes you a horrible person.
Yeah, the horror.
And you never get to go, it ended up okay. Switch Off was absolutely fascinating for me. And I think I said when you hit me up, I'm taking a break from guesting on many podcasts and stuff at the moment. But as soon as you hit me up about this, it was one that I had to be involved with. So kind of explain what the podcast is and what it makes the guests do.
To Switch Off. So basically on Switch Off, we ask the guests to come off all social media for a week and to see whether it changes their behavioural patterns, their mindsets. You know, it's sounding very deep, but obviously we spend so much time now scrolling on phones at stuff and then clicking on links that take us, you know, it is a wormhole. It's that old cliche that even if you just think, oh, I need to look at this for 5 minutes, it can be 5 hours later.
Yeah.
And all of that is kind of white noise because when you're in that world, you think it's so important.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're the center of the universe as well, because it's all your account and
100%.
The people that are looking at the things you're doing and posting. And yes, it's two-way as well. But I don't know, you don't get immersed in something like you do if you read a book. Or you'll often click on an article, but the very nature of it is in the whole, it's quite slight. Everything is quite superficial. So it's just coming, and it's because of that attention spans seem to be less. We need sort of instant hits, instant gratification. And so whether, I don't know, coming away from that of a week, and it's not a week where you're on holiday, it's a normal working week.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether that, I don't know, changes you, whether you feel like you're having withdrawal symptoms, is it like you're in rehab?
Yeah.
You know, how is it going cold turkey? So that is, and can I just say, you really did embrace it, because we've had people that sort of did manage to do it, but maybe had a few lapses here and there.
Yeah, and again, it was kind of explained in advance that that's part of the test. If you mess up, then we'll discuss that. If you have to go on, then we'll discuss that. It's not a kind of... So, yeah, I liked that there was that.
What I thought was really interesting, I have to say that you've had a haircut since I last saw you. Because for anyone that hasn't heard that podcast, I mean, it hasn't actually gone out yet.
Yeah.
But depending on when this goes out and when that goes out, Pip came to the podcast very hairy, like with a beard bigger than usual. Your hair. But it was very hairy and huggable, I thought you looked. But anyway, and realised during the week that he only communicates with his hairdresser via Instagram.
Yeah.
And because, you know, you were doing it sort of the full hog.
I was so strict.
You held out on the, which is only a week more, but that could be a lot of hair growth in your world.
Yeah,
I know my hair grows really quickly, and that can make a difference. And there's lots of little things, little rituals, communications, sort of, I don't know, lurking and watching someone or a site from afar that you do via the medium of social media that you might not realise. Like, oh, I get my little news fix on, I don't know, such and such topic from that stream. Or, you know, I like looking at the artwork of so-and-so, but only via the medium of social media. So I haven't seen what they're doing, you know. So
completely. And it was interesting. What I found fascinating about it was that, like, all the things you noticed that you maybe had overlooked, or all the ways you live your life normally. I guess essentially you kind of notice more the ways you don't waste your time on social media.
Yeah.
Because you notice the sites that you're like, oh, I want to check this. Oh, I can't. Because I can't go on. That's not the hours and hours that come up on your weekly screen time, where you're just scrolling and looking at stuff. But the other thing I found was it made me realise how unimportant a lot of it was. Because when I came back on, I was kind of like, well, there's nothing at the front of my mind that I'm like, oh, I need to catch up on this.
You know what I like?
It was fine to have not been on. There wasn't any, oh, I need to see what's happened here or what's happened there. It's like, no. Well,
what I liken it to is I remember when shortly before moving house, we were living in, me and Charlie were living in like a two-bedroom flat, but with all of our, well, we were supposed to have all of our possessions in there, but there was no space because we just had a baby. And so I had all my stuff at my mum's house. And basically, we didn't end up moving to where we were moving to like a few years later.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember what all my possessions were. I was literally living...
All this important stuff that you can't do without.
It was all of my worldly possessions. But then after like a year or so, like, I didn't miss it. I didn't even know what it was. I was quite happy, you know, having a wardrobe that consisted of not very many items at all. And like, literally, we were living in a shoebox.
Yeah.
One room was his study. The other room, I'm not even kidding, there was a bookshelf on one wall which touched the bed. So you couldn't actually get to the lower levels of the shelving unit. Then there was a cot.
I mean, that was clearly intentional. Like, there was some private stuff on them lower levels of that bookshelf. You've just not tweaked that.
It's this a is good way to hide secret stuff was. For sure. And then literally a wardrobe that you could hardly open. And then the other wall. It was like literally, it was that jam-packed. I think I just hit the mic if you heard an almighty clonk. But it's a similar thing.
Yes.
You think you can't do with something. And then when you have to, you don't know what it was you couldn't do without.
I tell my mum off all the time because I moved out of my mum's house over 10 years ago now. Mm. And every now and then she'll say, oh, I found this of yours, or I was clearing out this, I'll bring it round. And I'm always like, don't tell me and just throw it away.
Yeah.
If I've not had it for 10 years,
I don't need
just
it.
Throw it away. Yeah, if you bring it in my house, it's now going to sit somewhere in my house and never
I'm
get thrown away.
At throwing stuff away, though.
But that's it. That's why I'd rather not know. If I've not seen it for 10 years, it's when you find out about it. It's when they're like, oh, here's this. You're like, oh, I've got to keep that. I know I want to keep it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't tell me, I'll never think of whatever that thing is again.
You know what's interesting? So basically, then even when we did move house, I didn't get all my stuff back. My mum has passed away subsequently.
Right.
And every now and then I'll go and it's almost like I'm shopping in my mum's house because we're clearing it. So, but I'm like, oh, you know, I remember those jogging bottoms. They're so comfy to slouch around in. I mean, I haven't bought a new item of clothing for, 10 years now?
Yeah.
Because I don't need to. I'm not growing. You know, I'm quite happy to go around looking like a tramp. Other people might not be. But, you know, we just don't need more stuff.
I get really a lot of praise for the unusualness and creativity of my merch. It's mainly just for me to have new clothes. If there's something new I want, I'll release a new... It's normably my record label stuff because I don't want to wear a Scroobius Pip shirt. That feels weird. But I'll release... I've got the most creative record label shirt. I've got gloves. I've got umbrellas. I've got all sorts of stuff because it's like, oh, I need that. I'll make one as merch. And then I don't have to
make
go into shops and look it up.
Exactly.
It's fascinating. So what's your relationship with social media, I guess? And what inspired doing a show that makes people switch off for a bit?
I mean, I'm a really late adopter, so I wasn't on any social media. I wasn't on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, any of that. And then when I had kids, I At first, I said, I can do it all. I can work and I can. And then quite quickly, I thought, actually, I'm going to just do this mumming thing. It goes fast.
Yeah, it's quite a big job, isn't it? The whole keeping humans alive
it
thing.
It is quite a big job, and I'm quite I must be a control freak or whatever. I didn't want someone else to be doing the brunt of my mothering. So, but then as part of that, I was doing sort of bits and pieces of like often, I don't know, promoting National Reading Week or, you know, corporate, those sort of campaign-y things.
Yeah.
And often part of that you have to do a tweet, and I wasn't even on Twitter. And so I got a Twitter account really late in the day. I think it's 3 or 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
But because I'd never done Facebook or any of that stuff, the minute I got on there, like if I did a tweet and then everyone replied, I'd feel the need to reply. I couldn't leave things, you know, questions left unanswered and so on and so forth. And so then it just made me not want to tweet.
You've got normal human etiquette and politeness rather than the social media one. And I mean,
because
I think it changes.
Because I've never done social media, so I wasn't used to that. It felt like somebody's asked me a question. Maybe I'm OCD or something, but it literally just felt too rude.
I've had it in recent years. I've genuinely, this has been something I've thought about a lot, and it's troubled me, is group messages on WhatsApp.
Mm.
I would get annoyed when I'd put something in there and my mates hadn't, or a particular mate hadn't responded or whatever.
Yeah.
And I spoke to a friend about it because I was like, number one, I think it's perfectly reasonable to be annoyed that someone hasn't responded to something you put to them. But number two, I also think it's perfectly reasonable that it's a group message and you glance at it and you're busy and you're doing other stuff. Right. So it was a weird double world. It's like, I think it's perfectly fine. I also think it's the rudest thing
you
in the world.
It
so
is.
It's this weird balance of etiquette, which I'm sure you felt on social media at first.
Well,
you're
this
like,
is it. I'm
I don't have to reply
people.
To everything, but I kind of do because they've said something to me. So
yeah. So if you're sort of, by doing that, you're judging people by your cultural norm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember when I first went to Japan, to Tokyo, and this is related. It sounds like I'm going off on another tangent. But being in this area called Shibuya, which is really, I mean, Tokyo is overpopulated anyway, but literally when the pedestrian crossing, the lights go to the green man, it's almost like the crowd at Wembley Stadium or something. Right. There's so many people everywhere. Anyway, and quite quickly I realised when you bump into someone, like I said, oh, sorry, sorry, they just keep walking on. And I thought, how rude. We've just smacked into each other and you've just walked off without saying sorry. And it happened quite a few times. And just culturally there, they'd be saying, you know, it's the norm. They'd be saying sorry to each other every other second because there's so many people. You keep bumping into people on the street.
Yeah.
And so
it's unrealistic to apologise every time.
And in that, that's normal in that sphere. So to not reply a tweet is normal in the world of tweeting.
Completely.
It's not normal in the world of your friend texts you.
Yeah.
And maybe WhatsApp is a medium between the two.
That's it's the group text thing, is it's somewhere in between, because it's a real micro social media. There's a group there, you're all involved. Yeah, it's strange.
And so that's the thing, but I can't switch out of my sort of cultural mindset. I still want to reply everything that comes. So it put me off doing tweets a bit because I think, oh, I don't have the time to. But also I'm sort of just, you know, everyone uses Twitter for them. And what I really like to use it for is to communicate to people that I don't know, that I might meet in real life, but I don't necessarily, you know, we're not number swapping.
Yeah.
So you can communicate with people via DM without having to exchange phone numbers, which I think is quite handy.
Yeah, I can completely agree. A lot of my beneficial use of Twitter. Mm. Again, there's a lot, and I learned on that week, there's a lot of completely unbeneficial use of Twitter. But a lot of the beneficial one is exactly that, is not having to live in the 70s version of the entertainment industry where you need to be in a bar smoking a cigar to make your contacts, to talk to the right people. The fact that I can engage online, there's directors and all sorts who I chat to regularly.
Yeah, and
because
you're not
we follow
being
each other
intrusive.
No,
so
exactly. It,
with an email, you expect to reply because you know people are checking their email. With texting or any other, I think it's one of the only mediums I can think of where someone can message you directly, but there's no pressure on having to get back to them instantly, because some people don't check their DMs for days. Some people, you know, and you don't really know what someone's pattern is or how many DMs they've got in there, or, you know, so it's, I really like that facility of Twitter.
It's kind of nice. So have you had, or what's your outlook? I mean, you mentioned kind of coming on to social media indirectly because of motherhood.
Yeah.
Because you had these work responsibilities you needed to be able to do from home.
Yeah, I was losing jobs because part of the job was like, okay, so you need to do a day of media interviews and you need to do 3 tweets.
Yeah.
And you need to, and I was like, oh, okay, I can't do that.
It's fascinating as a tool for enabling that kind of situation to be able to have those kinds of impacts and presence, but from home, in between things, in between dinner
and
putting the kids to bed or changing or whatever else. Or even while you have a human latched onto you, taking life from your life, to be able to go, oh, I'll quickly get this work done. It's, in that respect, it's revolutionary.
Yeah.
It's amazing to be able to allow that and have that accessibility, right?
Yeah. But then remember, at the end of the podcast, we asked you, do you think it's, you know, social media is better or worse? Yeah. It's quite interesting hearing people's answers on that. Yours was a good one, actually, because you pointed out how, I don't know, without it, we might not be Brexiting and Trump. And like, the current world situation seems to have, had a big impact on it. But it's quite interesting hearing different people's answers because everyone looks at social media differently and uses it differently. So it is a million things to a million people.
It's that fascinating thing, though, is people like to justify their own decisions. And I'm kind of at times happy to not justify my decisions. I think it's undoubtedly made the world worse. Yeah, I'm on it constantly.
Yeah.
I'm using it for my work. Because people always argue it's good for promotion or for this or for that. It's like, that's not as important as
it's like a drug
as Brexit or Trump or any of these or the way that we've become such a tribal society at war with each other. I think that's happened because of social media. That's not as important as but I can reach my fan base.
Those are endorphins, the pleasure of, like, I don't know, someone saying something nice, whatever. And it is 100%. it's like a drug. I mean, it's no different from, you know, you like someone might like, I don't know, going out on the lash because of the sort of instant feeling.
Yeah.
But in the bigger picture, it's not necessarily a good thing.
It's been said numerous times, but it was one of the main forms of gamifying our lives. Computer games are addictive because you want to get more gold coins and go up more levels. That's what we've done with social media. We've put our lives into a game that's got a certain amount of likes and a certain amount of follows and a certain amount of retweets.
Mm.
And they're all things that we can switch on and engage. It's as if we're turning on the computer and having a quick go when we're doing a post or checking how many likes we've got. But we've brought it into the real world. That's what makes it kind of scary.
You stayed off it to some extent since?
Yeah, a lot more. A lot more. I've stayed off it a lot more.
Have you been doing more telly viewing or reading more books? Or?
Yeah. I've been a lot stricter. Again, it is tough because the addiction of sorts is still there. And I spoke to my brother about it, who's got his master's in philosophy. He's the most intelligent and got the world figured out person I know. He's not on any social media, so there's a clue there. But he was saying how part of it is, as well, it's we've built a society where we feel pressure to constantly be productive. And his argument is that's not how society is meant to be. We're meant to have leisure. Leisure is meant to be a key part of our lives. I had a Rutger Bregman on, who wrote a book called A Utopia for Realists. And in that, it talks about how up until the 70s, there was a big push to bring in the 4-day week.
Yeah.
And then suddenly that went out the window to, well, we need to work more. And now we're scared that robots are going to mean that we can't work. So we should be looking at robots as a positive for meaning that we can still have the same productivity, therefore still have the same money flowing around.
Yeah, yeah.
But have more leisure time. These should be things that we're... So, yeah, his point was we feel like, again, I'll be on social media a lot because I will feel in some way it's being productive but rather than being in the world, just being... It sounds hippie-ish, but being one or being present. I'll be on the toilet and I'll be like, I need to be on my phone because otherwise I'm not doing anything.
Well,
I'm just sat here with my own mind and it's terrifying.
Because people think that happiness comes from that productivity, don't they? When really, happiness does come from leisure.
Yeah.
And it's like you feel because...
But there's a guilt now with the happiness of leisure. We will have the guilt of, I've watched a whole box set this weekend, oh for God's
sake.
But
it's also because we're so competitive. We think, well, other people are getting ahead then. And competitive in everything. People are competitive over how much their house looks like a show home or, you know, what labels they're wearing and... what food they're eating, everything has gone a bit mental.
Yeah.
With sort of snootiness as well. Like, I think it's almost going to new levels. And it was quite refreshing.
Agree.
Is it Australia that are now striving for well-being as opposed to GDP?
Yeah.
And hopefully that's this new phase we're moving into. I don't know. So, you know what I was saying to you about kids being taught about, like, where happiness comes from?
Yeah.
Like, in Sweden, they have this thing called Lagom. Do you know about Lagom?
No, I don't.
And it was really massive. Lagom means just the right amount. So we don't need 50 pairs of shoes and we don't need, you know, all these possessions. It's that thing of what I was saying to you of, like, everything that was in my mum's house. And I was like, what is all that stuff? We only need just the right amount. And it sort of became naff to not be doing that, you know, to be buying new stuff when you can just, I don't know, mend your old stuff or whatever. It seems bonkers that, I don't know, people will spend, I don't know, 50 quid, 60, whatever it is, on a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to giving that money to, I don't know, save lives, give to charity or something, they'll just be like umming and ahhing.
Yeah, or they'll be making excuses. Oh, is it really going to get to them?
There?
Or what are they going to spend it on? All this kind of
but
thing.
But it's like, only a mentality. It's because everyone does that you do that, and we're all trying to keep up with everyone.
Yeah.
Whereas if you shift things at the root, like changing the law on the spoken van, or making kids sort of want to have that mentality and that mindset, then, you know, the future is bright. We only don't eat. It's like how we're trying, we only don't eat snake because that's not what's done. So we don't eat snake. So there is a future society where, if, I don't know, kids don't really eat much meat, they're sort of disgusted by eating meat because anything that gets to kids at their core, they take with them for life. And we're all, as adults, just totally a product of our upbringing.
Completely.
And we all think we're doing the right thing, even if that is, I don't know, doing, I don't know, being a Brexiter, or, you know, you think that, well, that's what will make me happy and what will make society. Yeah. People, it's,
it's what you're brought up as the norm. I think about this a lot because... I've got a lot of gay friends. On Instagram, I follow a lot of hot young ladies, and also follow a lot of hot young men because I can appreciate the male form, all this kind of thing. And I've thought a lot about the fact that I'm straight because I'm not into willies. That's just, it doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah.
But that's only because of my upbringing, right? That's because as a kid, you're told, oh, girls and this and that, and you need to get into, as a young kid, the thought of girls is gross. Thought of kissing a girl, oh, that's horrible. So my natural reaction now to thought of, I'm not turned on by the idea of kissing a guy, that's because I've had an upbringing of that. So it's what you're, there's so much in there.
How much do you think is an innate preference to, like, I don't know, that's sort of pre-programmed, like, I don't know.
Because obviously people are born a certain way.
I've never liked fennel, the taste of fennel. And, like, some of these things have to be things that are internally predetermined.
Yeah,
some is environmental.
It's got to be a combination of the two, right?
I
just feel that, or the majority of people are probably naturally, as a default, bisexual. And it's not about...
I think it's a spectrum.
Yeah, like everyone talks about how homosexuality was completely acceptable in Greek times. It wasn't. It just didn't exist. There wasn't straight or gay.
There was
dominant or submissive. That was it. It didn't matter what the gender was.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot more. That's where things are. So again, I've realised I've gone down a path there, implying, or that could be twisted to be, well, gay people are taught, you know, to change. Again, I think we are all born with our natural urges, but I think the restrictions are
everything
put
is a
on
spectrum.
By society. Yeah.
Everything is a sliding scale. And then we've put labels on things to make them sort of a bit more polar.
It's the labelling. Like as we were discussing before we came on, that meal is a vegetarian meal.
Yeah.
Why? It just happens to not have meat. We don't have a name for a kind of meal that doesn't have potatoes. I mean, that's rare.
No, but you know what?
You
know what? What we were also discussing before we came on, but the thing of diversity and inclusivity and being called a minority.
Yes.
So I, you know, for instance, when I got my job on Blue Peter, it was like first British Bangladeshi presenter, you know, first brown person on this show. And I was, you know, it's great because I can pave the way for other people to see this is the norm, but it's a sort of, a stage, everything is a phase, and then a few generations down the line we won't need that because it is the norm. And I was like, oh, but I can present too, or I'm normal like everyone else, but I'm brown. And the thing is that we're all a minority, whether it in many different situations, like you might be a minority because you're a train spotter, or you might be a minority because you stutter, or you might be in a minority because you like that disgusting t-shirt you wear every day, you know. There's so many minorities, and we've all been in a situation where we're an outsider or where we're other. But minority is a bit of a sort of fallacy in itself, because we're all minorities that make up this majority. And if we were all the same, then there wouldn't be any minorities. But no, you know, we're all different in so many other ways. But we don't, I don't know, talk about someone that has, you're absolutely right, like, I don't know, blonde curly hair by labeling them with a specific term for people with blonde curly hair.
No, exactly. It's where it's defined. And again,
and it's
the ignorance of our definitions, because it'll be like that person's Asian. What is there? Over 30 countries in Asia. And that they're black. So, wow. I mean, that's hundreds of different places with different cultures and different. And again, but there are these stereotypes of, that's how Asian people tend to be, or Asian people are more this or more that. It's like, which specific part of this huge continent are we attributing all these things to?
But also,
because we don't have them specifics.
Stereotypes. But every label, you know, undeniably, Asian people will have browner skin in the whole. You know, there are, you know, labels because, and stereotypes are stereotypes because they do maybe have some truth in them in certain scenarios. But the point is, when it's used for a negative, you know, because actually it doesn't matter whether, I don't know, someone's skin is a bit browner. It doesn't change anything, or their accent is different, or they speak a different language. It's when it's used for a negative, and it's kind of the two things become a bit blurred.
Yeah.
It's a funny one. But again, this is just a shift that, you know, we're going through, and probably, I don't know, in a few generations' time, we won't be even having these conversations.
It's so ridiculously insignificant.
Yeah.
So I mean, let's touch upon that a bit, because one of the things I've always really liked about you is that you've kind of refused to be defined as to what you are or who you are, and that's something that's always been really important to me. I don't want to be, oh, I'm a musician. If I want to do some presenting, I'll do some presenting. If I want to move into acting or writing or whatever else. And but when you kind of came into people's consciousness, it was a big deal, because it, what you were, as said, the first brown lady as a Blue Peter presenter. And
I mean,
it's weird that it's framed in that way, because you were also the longest female host on there,
it's
and stuff
just
like that.
Because back in those days, there weren't as many. And even now, you know, we could still say there isn't equality as such, you know, for women, for ethnic minorities. But, you know, progress has been made. But I do remember growing up, and my parents used to call us around the TV when this programme called Mind Your Language came on. Do you remember Mind Your Language?
No, I don't.
It was about a school that taught English.
Right.
And it was a sitcom, but, you know, but it was very racist. But by the standards of then, it wasn't really racist. Yeah, so in a similar way to how Apu has, you know, been pulled up now. But they were so proud of it.
Wow.
The brown people, because they were just proud to see other people like them on the telly. And it didn't matter, you know, and they could laugh at themselves to some extent because, yeah, they hadn't mastered the accent right or whatever.
Yeah.
In the same way that, you know, a French person will say English with the French accent or, you know. And it's that thing of whenever there was a brown person on the telly, they used to like literally call us down. I mean, this is going back, you know, I was born in the mid 70s. But, you know, now that would never be a thing. And similarly, when I was growing up and probably when you were growing up, kids hardly ate fish unless it was in the form of fish fingers. They'd just turn their nose up at fish. But yet when my nephew was a child, and he's, you know, at uni now, so this is by no stretch of the imagination recently, I remember his favourite food was sushi.
Wow.
And like, I, you know, kids ate olives and stuff. You know, so things, society just progresses.
I was going to say, it's a perfect example of what we were saying of how quickly these things can go from being a huge thing to being a tiny thing. Because even a slightly racist portrayal of an Asian family was exciting and to be celebrated when you were growing up.
Whereas
now it's just, you know, it's hopefully it's just another, here's just another thing that's happening.
Well, I remember I wanted to go into acting when I was like really young. I was in the National Youth Music Theatre and blah, blah. But there were no brown people.
Yeah.
In anything, unless EastEnders had an Asian family.
Yeah.
And that's how they were defined. At the time, they had a Turkish family with Mehmet. And so, you know, but now they've got so many different ethnic families. So things do, like, move on. And it's all part of that change and that shift that we're in now. And it constantly, everything's in a constant shift to sort of where we're going to end up in 11 years' time, when climate change will be irreversible and it's Armageddon.
It's going to be too late. We're going to sort it all out as humans,
no,
just as we've messed it up
fine.
As the planet.
You said we're going to do good in the next 11 years.
I mean, it's a fascinating one then, because you spoke about how, you know, wanting to get into acting then and the lack of roles. Oh, I've known Riz Ahmed for years, and I know that he went to America because in England, all of the options were terrorist or some kind
of thug cunning.
And
completely.
But they seem to have a wider variation, a little quicker, because we were so obsessed with period drama. So with that, there's just none. There's no options. Brown people didn't exist then, because otherwise the period drama has to address all the blood from which the money came from. So it was an interesting one there. But I remember talking to Riz, and it really kicked into him when he did Star Wars. Again, he's always been exactly that, of just, I'm just doing what I'm doing. I don't want it to be some big thing.
Yeah.
But he realised that when he was a kid, he could never buy an action figure that was
brown. Yeah.
And now that Christmas, for his Star Wars film, they could. And I think that's something that meant a lot with your long-term role on Blue Peter, because it wasn't like EastEnders. There's not the Asian family. Yes, at the start there was all this talk of the first Bangladesh
but you're
that's
just
not who you were. That's not who you were on the show. It wasn't over to our Asian correspondent.
No,
it was. You know, it was kind of.
Yeah.
You were just
a
regular presenter, and I think that will have meant a lot and paved a lot of ground for young brown children in England tuning in and it being the norm, it not being something that they're questioning. Their parents might be going, oh, this is unusual, but the children are just tuning in.
But similarly with disability, I remember doing auditions where we were seeing, you know, auditioning presenters with disability. And now, you know, when I grew up, there weren't any people on TV hardly with a disability.
Yeah.
And now it's changing slowly, you know, the on CBBC, I co-presented stuff before with Adi Adepitan.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's slowly changing with everything. If you think in the 60s, there was a lot of immigration and people came over.
Yeah.
And, you know, Whereas, I don't know, in medieval times, there wouldn't have been breakfast. Everything is just part of changing as a society and moving on. You could say, you know, we used to have dinosaurs and they all died out. And,
yeah.
You know, and it's just sort of, you have to take a lot of hits to get to the bigger, better picture.
It's getting the ignorant equality in first for genuine equality to come. It's yeah. getting the yes, here's our right, Asian character. Right.
Yeah.
You need to have that because that's, oh, look, we're doing it.
Yes.
And then the it's tokenism. Just here's our yeah. character who happens yeah. to be Asian.
Because it's going into people's mindsets that, I don't know, there used to be a time when there were hardly, I mean, still even, like, it's much more normal to hear a male voice on the radio
yeah.
than a female voice. But the more female voices we have, the more subconsciously we won't feel more at ease hearing a male voice. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Subconsciously, you like what you're used to.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah,
only completely. When we start changing up what we're used to that you'll just be accepting of it.
Yeah.
So people were probably subconsciously racist because they weren't used to seeing people in certain arenas, so they wouldn't sort of embrace it.
100%. There's like my dad's generation, South London. He grew up around black people. All his neighbours were black. No racism in him, but there would be that subconscious racism of being surprised mm. when someone's on TV or
yeah.
again. Of,
yeah.
Of a woman on the radio or things like that.
And it's with all... other stuff too, like regional accents. If you yeah. think how, you know, everybody used to say talk like this on the BBC
yes.
and it was all very prim and proper. And, you know, the first time you hear someone talking a bit like this, it's like, oh, well, then they're not sort of speaking the received, you know, pronunciation that we're used to or having a regional accent or, you know, and that, is discrimination.
Yeah.
There's so much, you know, as I say, there's so many minorities.
I was gutted when my music started to get coverage because I was put in the group of where they kind of said that Kate Nash and Lillian and all these, they refer to them as having Mockney accents. And they put me in that group. And I was like, no, that's just an Essex accent. I'm yeah. not doing a bad Cockney accent.
Yeah.
That's just how we sound. It's
yeah,
kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
nearly, but not
but
quite.
Not quite.
So,
yeah.
But it is a fascinating one. I had a lady on this podcast called Angel Jufria, and she's an actress. She's also a cyborg. She's got a robotic arm,
mm.
and it's amazing. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen. She does amazing stuff with it. And she spoke to me about how excited she was when she'd got a role. And she's done some great stuff. She's been in some Marvel stuff, I think, all yeah. sorts, but it's always in tech labs, in this kind of thing. And she got a role that was just a waitress.
Yeah, yeah.
And that meant so much more to yes. her than any yes. other role because
yes.
she wasn't cast as the woman with the robotic arm.
Yeah.
She was cast as a waitress.
As an actress.
Who happened. And it's
yeah.
been, like, there's a script I've written that I'm trying to get a Netflix to make at the moment. And obviously I'm a massive egotist, so every script I write has me in it. But the character that me and my mate had written for me, we've given him a stutter because although in acting I can control it, we were like, well, it's fine. Let's just not make it a big part of his character. It's not this big deal that he's
yeah,
got
yeah,
a stutter,
yeah.
but have someone just stuttering.
Because you're representing.
Yeah, and equally, I know, quite understandably, no one would just write that into a script. It's a fucking weird thing to
yeah,
just think,
yeah.
oh, they've got a stutter. It's like, oh, now I'm going to have an actor
and
do a
no...
weird fake stutter. It's going to be really awkward. And it's
yeah.
going to feel as if we're imitating a disability. It's like, that's weird. So it was that. I was like, well, I can, though.
And
I can write
no
that in and I can do
it. For
it.
And that's the beauty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think it'd be great if there was a lot more of that. I said, I really loved Man Like Mobeen.
Oh,
Gus Khan is a mate of
on?
Mine. Yeah, I've had
yeah.
Gus on.
Oh,
we were in a film together and we just hit it off because
yeah,
we
yeah.
were the two who it seemed like shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Because
yeah. we were both just from working class kind of, and Mobeen was great because it does address Islam and things like that, but it's not the key part. These are just some lads off of an estate
yeah.
who happen to be Muslim and happen, and it blew me away.
It's funny.
And if people haven't watched it, the first series is good. The
yeah.
second series is next level. I'd really just thought they they suddenly start to bring drama in, which I wasn't expecting. And yeah, but yeah. It's great to have. I think shows like that are hugely important, and they're also important because, again, being a mate of Gus, he'd be sending me the tweets he was getting, racist tweet, because it was on the BBC.
He would be
getting horrific, abusive tweets, and that makes you go, see, that's why these things are important. And it's that whole thing of the biggest argument, or a lot these days people say, oh, why do you always have to make it about race, or I don't see colour, or whatever. That's white privilege. We don't have to see race. We don't see race because we've not had to. It's not thrown in our face every day. It's a beautiful privilege that the first time you're confronted by it is when someone is calling you out on your bullshit. That's, you shouldn't be angry at that. You should feel lucky that you've got to that point.
Opened your eyes,
I don't have to deal with that every day. How lucky am I?
Yeah.
So how was it doing a show like Blue Peter for so long and then figuring out what's next? Because you've written, obviously you wrote an episode of Black Mirror, which is a great episode, and you wrote a short that won awards instantly. So it feels like you had kind of instant success as a writer, but then...
You know what's interesting is because I came straight out of university and then went on to Blue Peter and then did that for over 11... No, it was over 10 years. So I did it for 11 years. It's so mad. And because it's so busy, and then it was sort of on at times five times a week. So it was on three times a week on BBC One. And then they just started doing those digital channels then. Because we're going back to the olden days. So it was on Tuesdays and Thursdays on the CBBC channel, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Wow.
On terrestrial. So the schedule was so full on, and you'd be doing a live studio, then traveling to such and such place and doing this, that. Everything's
organised for
you. The digital
ones not as important. Did you ever feel as if you're phoning them ones in because they're on digital rather than the main ones?
Weirdly, they didn't have as much budget. So often it was lots of sort of rehashing of like extra footage and linking to, you know.
This again.
Yeah, exactly. And sort of lots of cheaper items. And then I think a bit further down the line, they changed the format. So one of those shows was entirely sort of interacting from viewers' letters.
Oh, wow, and great.
Yeah, so things that, I don't know, if a viewer had sent in a suggestion of an item or...
Yeah.
But so after I came off that show, it's really weird because anyone that's freelance will know that when you've sort of been in a stable job and then you go freelance, it's like, huh? Where's my next meal coming from?
Yeah, scary, right?
Yeah, really scary. And I think in life you have these anchors. And you know what I was saying to you before? I think so. Happiness is governed not by sort of monetary means, but with you sort of real friendships, real relationships, your family. And those are the sort of anchors. And part of that is working, because you have friends at work, and how much you enjoy your work is to do with how well and how much you like the people there and how much you're enjoying what you're doing. And I remember my parents, you know, my dad had got ill. I had come out of this really long job. I was thinking about sort of changing agent, which is another anchor. And suddenly it felt like, oh my gosh, I feel a bit like I'm floating in space. I don't know what's coming next. Yeah. And I don't quite know what I want to do next, you know. And so that's kind of destabilizing. Yeah. You know, if you're not, you know, I wasn't married.
It's the worst and best industry because of that. Because there is the option to do almost anything, I think, now because of social media and because of how you can chase any direction or any dream. But equally, and I have this regularly still, when you're laying in bed at night and you've not got the next gig lined up, there is that.
What now?
What am I doing?
Yeah.
What is... Here's all the things I want to do, but how many of them are just a stupid idea? What's realistic here?
And also, do you think as well that sort of freelance mentality makes people... It's kind of a bit more capitalist in a weird way.
Yeah.
Because you also... It's much more competitive.
Yeah. Yep, I think there's that.
And so there's that thing of like, I need to be busy all the time and doing things, and, you know, it's guilt. I feel guilty. I've just been doing leisure, you know. Yeah. And so that's a funny one.
It's all based, we base, because we're used to working, or the rest of society is working time allotted jobs, time scheduled jobs, nine to fives, that we think in the same way. And the fact is, if in your day, all you had to get done was, for example, a podcast, if that takes you an hour, then you've done your day's work. Yeah. You shouldn't beat yourself up over that. You sit there going, you sit there going, well, I have to fill the rest of the day. It's like, no, that's you've done that. That's what you were meant to do. That's really good. You can clock off early, but you can't get your head around
that.
That
way
it is.
Because it's such a sort of keeping up with the Joneses convention. Yeah. And the minute you come out of that, it's so liberating. Yeah. So at first, I think I had that mindset. Like, oh, no, I've got to be doing stuff. Da, 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 and, you know, what's blah, blah doing? And, da, 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 da. And then the minute, you know, and it's that adjustment period. And then the minute you come out of all that, weirdly, you know, being a mum, just brought me completely out of all that.
Of course.
And then the minute you dip back in for this or that, you realise how like nice it is being out of that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bit like the whole social media thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm more or less dipped out all the time because I just like it compared to when I'm in it.
Or being a parent in general has to be such a good bullshit filter. All the people I know, male or female, in these kind of industries that have got kids are like, no, I'm not going to go and do that.
Yeah.
That's fucking ridiculous. Whereas those who haven't would be like, well, you know, I might meet someone there or this might be this opportunity. It's like, no, that's ridiculous. You have to throw out so many of these stupid ideas of what's important.
Grounding. And you know what? No matter whether you're a company executive at the top of your field or, you know, sort of unemployed, when you have a baby and that baby is reliant on you for milk or to wipe up its shite.
Or again, just keeping them alive. They will go out of their way to die. They will walk into stuff, fall off stuff.
And yes, you can get, I don't know, nannies coming out of your eyeballs or whatever. But the minute that baby's born, it only, at first, it's relying on you for the milk. You know, it's kind of like back to basics, isn't it? You know, until you're out that hospital, you have to change the nappy with the assistance of the midwife or whatever. But it does bring you back down a few levels, I think. Yeah. Because, you have to keep them alive, like you say, for 18 years and beyond now because they don't leave home till they're 35.
Yeah, so. It's true. What's your thought on social media with regards to your kids? What's your outlook? Have you planned what your approach is going to be? Because it's such a tough one.
It's
unavoidable, and I think you can get in the risk of being the dottery old parent who's overprotective in the same way your parents or you call that music. That's not music. This is real music. Things like that. I think it's tough. I think phones are such they're going to be such a key part of
they're
our society.
Extension of our brains now. You know, I don't remember so much stuff because I know it's in my external hard drive, aka my phone.
Yeah.
And you know, they are an extension of us. I hate to say it, but they are.
And people argue, well, we don't educate ourselves as much because you can get so much information just online. It's like, well, that's always going to be the way from now.
Yeah.
So the way we build our brains is going to need to be different. We don't need so much pointless, so many pointless facts. It's sad, but that's
the way of the future. It's just part of progress. There was a time when, you know, certain people frowned upon books, like these are evil things. But, you know, people resist change because they're not
for
sure
so long.
What it's bringing.
I used to rally all the time against the idea that people would still kind of hold off a thought of it's the idiot box, it's this, it's that. Always the guy was like, oh, I haven't actually got a TV. And it's like, I've got Netflix and Amazon and everything else. It's like, you're watching TV still, you prick. it's because the fact is, it's an idiot box if you put the stupid dumb shit on your TV. But you can watch documentaries, you can watch amazing dramas. There's characters in film that I've connected with and learnt from as much as any book.
Yeah.
Literature has got age on its side, therefore it's that accepted, well, it's literature.
Yeah.
People aren't reading books anymore. So does suck, but still.
It's a different medium, isn't it? And I think my husband is very much a sort of, he's a total gamer and he's a techophile. So you know, whereas all the parents at the school gates are sort of, yes, I only let my little boy have half an hour of screen time. I'm sort of like, yeah, I was only have half an hour off screen time. Yeah. I mean, like, completely. Literally, you know, and he
I've got an arcade a unit at my house as well. Oh, yeah. There's an arcade unit. It's like, you can't have these things.
No, exactly. And, you know, I actually think at least with computers and gaming, it's interactive to some extent. You know, well, Kobe plays this game, Baba is You, and it's problem solving. Yeah. And he managed to solve a problem that, you know, Charlie couldn't solve the other day. So, you know, that's no bad thing.
No, it's it can be really good. And again, it's the same as, that's a great example because it's the exact same ignorance. People are getting up in arms because there's talk of gaming going into the Olympics. And they're like, yeah, but it's, you know, it's all killing people. It's like, they probably won't choose that game then. If you know, there's a whole variation of games. It's like saying that TV, oh, people get raped, so not on Coronation, although I guess they do on Coronation Street, but still not in a graphic manner.
Not in the right sphere.
But people will argue it's not an athletic sport. It's like shooting is in the Olympics. That's no different from gaming in that it's your hand-eye coordination.
Well, what's interesting, there is a real snobbery speed against gaming. And what's interesting is whereas TV channels are quite happy to put film review shows up, and the gaming industry is much bigger than the film industry, but all the main channels still, you know, resist and refuse putting on gaming.
Completely. Programs. I was a big fan of Go 8-Bit, and I went on the spin-off show. And again, it was a great show that's happens to be about computer games, but it's a panel show. Everyone loves a panel show. They're cheap to make. And that got cut.
Yeah,
and it was just, we'll get rid of that.
Yeah, and
it's somehow seen as niche, despite it being a multi-billion dollar industry.
Look at the Let's Play, you know, the Let's Play YouTubers.
Yeah.
They have millions and millions of views, more than any terrestrial TV channel. Yeah. But I guess it's because it's not in commissioners' sort of stream of consciousness. Because, like I say, you just go with what your sort of cultural norms are.
Yeah.
And then they'll say, well, gamers wouldn't watch TV. But then that's because there's nothing for them to watch. You know, it's a two-way sort of causation.
Yeah.
And that's why progress and everything, it goes back to the same subject, doesn't it, Pip? But progress is slow because we have to have these little sort of steps, you know. But I do think if we get to the children, progress could be faster.
Yeah.
But then, as you say, they have to grow up and become the adults that go out into society to make the world a better place.
I agree. I agree.
I was just going to say, because I did economics at university, but in economics, there's the two schools of thought, the right wing thinking and the left wing thinking of, you know, to increase a country's GDP, you increase the money supply according to monetarists. So that might be, I don't know, issuing bonds or printing more money, tweaking, however you do it, if you put more money into a system, that makes prosperity. Whereas left wing Keynesian thinking is you pump money into goods and services, schools and hospitals and building roads, and then you'll increase GDP that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, both work in the short run, but in the short run, you know, people can be wage price inflation hasn't caught up.
Yeah.
The minute prices just all go up, then that happiness or that boost turns nominal. It's not a real change. It's a nominal change.
Yeah.
Whereas when you pump money into goods and services, you know, that's thinking more long term. And that's how I think about people, in that you can get happiness by getting the iPhone 1000, but it's a short-term fix because the iPhone 3000, you know, if we get our happiness through clothes and through material things, it's short-lived because there'll always be the next thing. Whereas if you get it through relationships and the people you surround yourself with, that's a real thing because that sort of goes to your heart, that happiness.
Yeah, and I think it's a change that's really important. I've got really into and comfortable with the idea of long-term goals and projects. It sounds like a weird one, but 3 or 4 years ago now, I got into my fitness, and the guy who trains me kind of said, there's no new solution eating healthy and exercising over a long period of time will keep you healthy.
Yeah.
You could go on this new fad or this new fad because everyone wants that quick fix.
Yeah.
And it's been great. And it's why I've become quite short where any of my mates who are like, oh, I've just joined this new thing online thing. I'm like, cool. Talk to me in 6 months.
Yeah.
If you do it for 3 weeks and then you stop, I don't care because it's wanting that instant.
But also you're changing something at the root because you were saying before that it's now that you've been doing it, you like eating that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've sort of embraced it and now you've sort of tweaked your mindset. Like, it's like I like drinking hot water and people think I'm mad and I didn't used to at first.
Yeah.
But I really do now because it was too weird at first because my friend used to drink hot water and I was like, that's really weird. That's, you know, it doesn't taste of anything or whatever. But now I find it kind of comforting and warming and like a hug.
Yeah.
But I know that, you know, the taste is not anything comparable to a cup of coffee, but I like it in its own right. I know this is really a weird parallel, but remember when The Office came on telly, when it first came out, it got terrible reviews and people were just slating. They were like, what's that? Because it was so different that they hadn't sort of taken on the mindset and embraced it with, you know, these people have long pauses and they look off camera because it's a mockumentary. And the minute you sort of get what it is and buy into it, then people love it. It's like embracing the whole thing and then your mind actually changes to what it likes and doesn't like. Because a lot of it is...
It's familiarity, right?
Yeah.
I used to get asked to do kind of talks and that for music industry things. And I was never up for it. But I always felt the answer to the question of how do you make a hit or how do you have... It's like, it's familiarity. If you can convince Radio 1 to play it every day, then people will like it. It's why if you go to a gig, you enjoy the songs you know the most because they're familiar. There might be better songs and they'll play a new song that at the time you'll be like, all right, and then a year later, once you've heard it on the album, it's your favourite song.
Yeah.
But it's familiarity, so there's not actually a key artistically, I don't think. And again, I think it's the same using the example of The Office, I've grown to like the American Office more than the original Office, but it's because there's a lot more of it. It's because there's a lot more of it. It's familiarity. Yeah. I've got to know those characters over 8 seasons rather than over 2. And at first, exactly that, I was like, who are these pretend... Jim and...
But also, in a similar vein, don't you find now we're so used to binge-watching stuff?
Yeah.
And where you watch episode, that when something comes on and you have to wait a whole week to see the next episode, you kind of don't enjoy it as much.
Yeah.
Because now we're just used to watching it on tap. And things that we watch on tap and we love, I don't know if we'd love as much... If we watched it in the olden days with a week
it's
in
weird
between.
Though, because I think there's also exceptions to the rule where it's heightened because we're not used to it. So
but
having to wait for
really
Line of Duty was
good.
Yeah, and The Virtues
but
recently was another
about
one.
That
I was like,
things that are mediocre. So when you're talking about catchy songs, you're talking about there's amazing ones.
Yeah,
but there's ones that are good, and it's things that are in that middle bracket. I think. If you have to wait a week and it's just good, you might not stick it out.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's just on tap, then you'll watch the whole series.
I think it potentially means that we're all watching a lot of shit stuff and not realising.
Because when we say shitter, you would have if you had to wait a week. So it means you change your barometer a bit because the nature of how you're consuming it is different.
Yeah.
Which is the case with anything.
Yeah.
You'll judge it on how it's sort of fed to you. And it's this thing of like, now I'm going to sound like a nut job, but how dairy milk tastes completely different to chocolate buttons.
And you know,
how you're consuming something is a lot to do. If you have something on tap, you know, you might not revere it as much as if it's just drip fed.
It's completely true. I was discussing this discussion, we're coming full circle now. This discussion was going on my Instagram recently because I did a post just saying how great is lasagna. Mm. And that was it. It's great. And someone below was saying, can you solve this? Because a friend of hers, she had said, I didn't even respond to this. I saw other people responding. A friend of hers says she hates spaghetti bolognese but loves lasagna.
Yeah.
And it annoys her because she's like, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But
it's not.
It's
though.
Not. But it isn't. I completely agree. Because again, it is the same thing. But texture, and you know, you'll
texture
get
texture is taste.
You get the burnt, crunchy edges of a lasagna. Yeah. You don't get that in a bolognese. I like both, incidentally. But yeah it's a perfect example.
But even the shape of the pasta. So having spaghetti bolognese is very different from having penne bolognese.
It's mad, isn't it?
Because the texture is also taste.
And probably the percentage of which you get, if you know what I mean. Yeah, if you've got strings of it, you might take in more or less.
Well, penne will have more sauce in the tube.
Yeah.
So more will cling to it. It depends on the surface area as well as the pasta.
It's, it's a very scientific discussion, to be completely honest. Well, I mean, I'll start to wrap things up now, but I want to kind of ask a what's ahead. You mentioned acting.
Who knows?
I watched Good Omens recently, and I was very excited about Good Omens because I love Neil Gaiman
and he's
Terry.
Great.
I auditioned for it, and it's one of the only auditions I've had in recent years that I came out and thought, I didn't do very good there. Yeah. I thought it was shit, and that's not me being arrogant. I just really enjoy auditions. Like, I don't mind if I get them or not, so I wasn't heartbroken or anything, but that was the one that was annoying because I came out knowing that wasn't as good as I am, if you know what I mean. But it meant I was excited to watch it because I'd got to read a couple of the scripts.
Yes.
I was like, this is fucking brilliant. So it was exciting to see you in that. And how's your...
I mean, like you said before, as for whether... I don't know whether it's because I get itchy feet or whatever. I find it really, like, I don't know, restrictive to say that... To stick to just doing one thing, I guess.
It's...
And Blue Peter gave me that variety.
Yeah.
One day... You know, I'm at the top of, I don't know, Sugarloaf Mountain. The next day you're down a sewer. The next day you're with a pop star. The next day you're with a scientist. It gives you that variety. So Blue Peter I did stick to for over 10 years because it worked
for me.
So the next thing is I've got these books coming out.
Right.
And they're to do with, once again, the themes of inclusivity and diversity are back on the table. But so they are about a 9-year-old girl, actually she turns 10 in book two, who's into sort of, she's into knowledge, like she likes long words and she's kind of into science because she thinks it's really cool. But, you know, it sometimes sounds square or worthy if you say this is a girl that's into STEM learning and she's from an ethnic minority background and, you know, her friend has gay parents and, you know, it sounds... So really what I'd say is it's a cross between Bridget Jones and Wimpy Kid.
Right,
and we've gone next level because all that sort of inclusivity, diversity stuff is secondary because it's the norm now in the world.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know... I came from a background in which my parents wanted me to go into science or be an accountant or a doctor or an engineer because those are the revered professions.
Yep.
Whereas we're in a society where the revered profession seems to be being famous. Do you see what I mean?
And completely, completely. And, it's end result without the bit that should, because again, I've got nothing against fame, but you should be famous for being really good at something.
This is the thing. While
for
I'm
excelling
Peter,
in something.
Yeah,
rather than just for being famous.
Exactly, for famous' sake. And while I was on Blue Peter, often I'd ask kids, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And often, you know, loads of kids gave really good answers. But there'd always be that kid that says, I want to be famous. And then you're like, oh, what for? And they don't know what for. They just want to be famous. And it feels, you know, a bit hypocritical of us being scathing of that. But, you know, I think that it's partly because of mindsets. If sort of science, you know, so when my parents' culture, science is, you know, science and you know, STEM professions are seen as the revered profession because it's a, like we say, it's a mindset.
Yeah.
And we're all just used to what we're used to. So maybe these books can be part of helping to pave the way for that is a sort of revered or a cool thing. Or, you know, just being clever is cool.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes as grown-ups we can realise that too late.
Yeah.
And so we think, completely. Oh, if only I had paid more attention at school because I'd really like to know about, I don't know, what's going on inside an atom or whatever.
So much of my education has come post-school
yeah.
where I've suddenly gone, oh, right, I want to know stuff. I don't want to be ignorant and blind to all these things. I kind of,
yeah.
And that's when it's hardest to learn. Partly, yeah. as you said, of the brain kind of being formed and good to go around 20. Therefore, it's harder to get things yeah. in and make them stick. And partly because teachers are pretty fucking handy.
Yeah,
have someone to go, I like this, and go, well, you should read this, 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 and this. There isn't an algorithm. Yeah. Who can actually say, oh, you'd enjoy this, yeah, or try this out.
Yeah, to ignite that thing that I was yeah. saying, you take with you. You know, we've been watching 63 Up, and we, you know, it started as 7 Up, where yeah. they follow the kids, and you really do see those kids are pretty much shaped very early on.
Yeah.
And so really that is the key to having a good society in my head. You know, making sure that the kids have the right values at the core, which they then take with them
yeah,
throughout completely. Life and want to give back. And then I've co-written...
And what are the book's called?
So Cookie and the Most Annoying Boy in the World is book one. And the other thing behind them is, so boys will buy books about boys and girls will buy books about boys.
Right.
But... boys don't buy books about girls. So yeah. how can we have equality in a world yeah. where this is happening to our children? So hopefully these books, well, they're trying to appeal to boys and girls.
Right, that's great.
You know, Cookie's always in trousers because I grew up wearing only trousers in, you know, apart from school uniform, which wasn't allowed to be trousers back yeah. in those archaic yeah. times, because now school kids can wear trousers if they're girls. But there's also... another book I've got coming around Christmas, which I've co-written, which is Stealth Woke. So it's traditional fairy tales updated for the modern age. So you've got stuff like Trumpelstiltskin,
oh, wow.
which is about a money-obsessed, power-hungry, little funny orange man, but it's also Rumpelstiltskin as well.
Amazing.
And there's Jack and the Baked Beanstalk, which is about, you know, these giants coming down this beanstalk and living happily with the villagers until the village elders decide to chop the beanstalk down after a vote. And so then the giants go back up, sort of in a Brexit-style fashion.
Amazing.
You know, there's plastics in the seas. It's covered with the pickled mermaid. She's worried that her mermaid folk are going to become extinct. There's Me Too. There's iPad addiction. There's all sorts
amazing.
Of modern-day topics covered in the guise of classic fairy tales. And that's coming out in... But maybe we can do another podcast yeah. before that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that sounds great.
That's coming out for Christmas.
I love the sound of it.
Yeah, 16 different tales in total. So, yeah, that is what the near future holds. And, of course... Switch Off, which
yes, is which is on BBC Sounds, right? And people yes. can listen to them all there. And who have you got? I saw you've got Adam Buxton was there.
So yeah,
you've
got... So we've tried to go for big podcasters. We've got Deborah Frances White,
yep.
Guilty Feminist. Adam Kay,
yes.
best-selling author of This Is Going to Hurt. Yep. Charlie Brooker, because there's a bit of nepotism in there, obviously.
Fantastic.
Shappy Corsandi, because
fantastic.
She's a mum mate of mine. We were at the same
Shappy.
Primary school.
Oh,
and
really?
We're both Ealing folk.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So, yeah, a good mix of people in there.
It sounds
but
awesome.
It's, you know, it targets people that are mainly big sort of podcasty, social media-y
yeah.
people.
And just out of my own curiosity, because I follow, I think, all of those people, and I didn't notice any, but one thing I noticed that we discussed that I chose not to do was I didn't do any kind of announcement that
yes.
I was going to be off. Did anyone else go that route?
Well, some of them didn't manage to stay off. That's Charlie whispering that he's off out. It's, well, you either interrupt confidently or don't interrupt at all.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm whispering loudly. I'm going.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
See you.
Yes.
Yeah, so
I chose not to announce because I wanted it to be a more... natural thing to see naturally if people would not notice me, which the bulk didn't.
None
I didn't want it to be a look at me, I'm gone.
Yeah, none of them felt. I haven't finished recording them all, actually, having said that, but of the ones I've recorded thus far, none of them felt that their absence was noticed that much.
It's something I can't remember if I talked about on the podcast, but it's something I wanted to talk about, because, and let's get it in here. I think it's important. I see a lot of, I've seen, like, mental health is discussed a lot online. I'm now starting a whole new podcast and going off, but mental health is discussed a lot online.
I've got a lot to say on that. If you do want to start, let's keep going.
We did discuss how damaging social media can be, but one of the things I've noticed is I've seen people every now and then do a post saying that they were quite sad that they were offline for a bit and no one noticed, and they were struggling and no one reached out. And it made me sad because I think we've built a system where people won't notice. That's just how the system is, because of algorithms, because of things like we won't notice. So it doesn't mean that they don't care about you or that they aren't your friends. So the solution should be to encourage people to, if they're struggling, to reach out to people rather than to hope people reach out to them, which would be great and ideal. And I encourage people to do that as well. But yeah, it struck me as something. It's like I wish there were more people who were comfortable saying, I've gone quiet because I'm struggling, because I'm having a rough time, rather than as said, hoping someone will notice, because we've built a system where they won't. Even if they care about you so dearly, because of algorithms, because of everyone is following hundreds and hundreds of people, they won't notice. And it's not because you're
also
shit or worthless.
Hundreds and hundreds of people that are portraying this sort of avatar of themselves with their Instagram curated photos with the filters and look how perfect my food is and my life is and so on and so forth. I've got this real thing of, you know, I'm quite lucky, I've never struggled with depression or mental health, or, you know, I'd say that I don't know, I'm quite well balanced, but I think part of it is, I don't know, having parents that came over from Bangladesh, from a village, essentially. They tried to do Who Do You Think You Are on me, and they couldn't research any further than my parents' generation because there's no documentation. They literally made up their birth certificates to come over to the UK. Wow. But I have this real thing of like...
I love that. Who do you think you are? We've no idea. Yeah, so, sorry. Know. This isn't going to work.
This is all made up. But that thing of, in society, we set our standards higher and higher and higher. And we only have disappointment when we can't reach these extremely high standards we're setting ourselves with the show home house or the trendy clothing or the whatever it is. So I have this thing of, I set my standards very low, and then I'm never that disappointed. You know, I don't want the 20 million followers or the beautifully show home looking house or the, you know, because that will only mean I attract a caliber of person that sort of got those same standards, and then you're trying to outstandard each other, even if it's subconsciously, or you think, oh, I can't invite them round because they'll be judging that my decor or any of that. And I have this thing of like, because now our kids are going to lots of children's parties, and you know, they are at their fourth choice state school, which is a melting pot of different cultures. You know, the social demographic is just, you know, I love that school. It's half an hour away, which is annoying because it's our first fourth through school, and we weren't even entertaining it. And we went to the open day and just thought, actually, we really like this place. But the point is that, you know, you have these kids have these birthday parties, and like, I don't know, the gifts and the, you know, activities and the entertainer and the things, you know, everybody's sort of thought of it. So, and their standards seem to be going higher and higher on all fronts. This is a kid's party.
Yeah.
These, you know, even with like toys that kids get these days, they're happy playing with the cardboard box. And, you know, in America, my friend who lives
again,
in America.
Again, it's choices as well. It's the choice of the parents who are making it that way rather than what the kids actually want.
You know, my friend in America was saying that they all spent hundreds of pounds on these birthday parties. And so me and my friend had a joint birthday party for our kids, and the invites were on recycled cards. We're like, let's bring standards down. Yeah. Let's make it from the recycling bin, these invites. Or, you know, but just in general, I don't know. I think we're just setting ourselves up for, if you'll only eat in 3-starred Michelin restaurants, you're going to have a lot of disappointment your whole life.
Yeah.
And we seem to be going that way. You know, I know young people that just, young people, I sound like old folk now, that just sort of seem to Deliveroo and Uber everywhere and complain about how skint they are.
Yeah.
And it's just like, there is something wrong here.
Completely. Well, I'm going to end it there as we're on
And feel free to edit out any...
I'm not going to edit anything. I love
verbal diatribe, my preachy ranting.
And we both enjoy excited rambling and stumbling over each other's sentences, so it's perfect. So thank you very much. And as said, Switch Off is on BBC Sound, so go and listen to all the episodes there. And thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Cheers. Thank you.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was the wonderful Connie Huck. I just want to... There was something we touched upon in that, and it played on my mind ever since. I think anyone who knows me or has listened before, and we covered it in the podcast, everyone will know my intention, but I wanted to clarify just for... In case anyone misinterpreted and was offended, there was a bit in there where I kind of... spoke about feeling that we're all kind of born with no sexuality, and then it's as our choice of sexual partner or sexuality is imposed upon us by societal things and things like that. And to be clear, I'm coming at that from the angle of that all sexuality is a construct. I'm not coming at it from the angle that people aren't born gay or whatever else, or bi, or pan, or any of the other sexual choices. And I think people will know what I meant by that. And we did obviously address it quickly, but I wanted to be extra clear on it because, you know, regardless of any good intention there, there's people that their sexuality has been, they've been told that it's not real, it's not natural, and all these other horrible things, pray you straight, straight camps, all that kind of absolute horrific nonsense. So I wanted to be clear, I wasn't coming from that angle. It was more that I think everyone is born gay, and everyone is born hetero, and everyone is born pat. Do you know what I mean? I think the capability for all of that is in all of us, and then it kind of grows and develops. Again, even this might be offensive. I regretted it played on my mind because I regretted bringing up a subject that I'm not, you know, it's going from my own kind of theories and thoughts and looking at Greek culture and Greek sexuality and stuff like that. But obviously, as a straight white male, I've not had any kind of hardships in sexuality. So I wanted just to be clear that those musings were coming from a positive and comfortable place because I'm so comfortable chatting with Connie, but because of the comfort of the position I can speak from, it maybe means I'm not the expert or the authoritative voice in that area. So if anyone got any twinges or offence there, genuinely apologies. I bow to everyone's individual experiences. I don't think there's an overall experience. I think it's all personal and individual. But anyway, there we go. I told you she was fantastic. You may have heard a brief appearance there from her hubby, Charlie Brooker, previous Distraction Pieces podcast guest. It was quite hilarious because through PR people, I'd been arranging a chat with Charlie for ages, and it had been moved and we'd juggle things about. And then I was arranging a separate one with Connie because I'd done her podcast. And then when the podcast was confirmed by the PR people, it was for a Tuesday, and literally the day before I'd confirmed to be in Charlie's house on the Thursday. So he no doubt thought I was a weird, creepy stalker. So apologies for that, Charlie, but it was well worth it to get that conversation with Connie. As I said, check out the Switched Off or Switch Off podcast and pre-order Connie's book, Cookie and the Most Annoying Boy in the World, I believe. It sounds fantastic. I'm really excited about it to get it for my goddaughter. A few things I want to tell you about. I said I'm trying to make the outros more rambly and the intros less rambly now. It's just an experiment because there's some people who don't realise the podcast is it's about all of it. Anyway, I'm not going to moan about that. But yeah, I like having a chat with you guys because we get to have a catch up and see what's going on. Last week I went to see previous guest James Acaster on tour, and it is so good. I genuinely can't recommend going out and catching his current tour enough. It's, yeah, he's a master. I've seen James a load of times, and this may be my favourite of his shows. He's a wonderful, wonderful human being. So go and check him out. Obviously, as I mentioned in the intro, I've got my club night the week, not this Saturday, the Saturday after, the 27th. We've got Russell Lissack from Block Party coming down. And also, it's the weekend before my birthday. So I will be having it as my kind of birthday celebration. So it'll be lovely to see as many of you as possible coming and dancing the night away at the Book Club in Hoxton. Next week's guest is a great one. It's Greg Jenner, who's a historian, generally fascinating and wonderful dude, but also happens to be the historian behind Horrible Histories, which is obviously an absolute phenomenon. And the new film comes out. Is it this week it might come out? I think the film comes out this week and the podcast is out next week. It might be out next week. But yeah, it looks amazing. And our chat kind of confirmed, it seems like it's just fantastic. So yeah, I highly recommend that. I've been recording some good ones lately, but I don't want to say anything because I keep them a secret. I reveal them on patreon.com/scroobiuspip, which is only $1 a month. Oh, speaking of which, actually, we broke 15 million downloads last week. You absolute maniacs. Thank you very much for supporting. I joked on a post somewhere about it. Imagine if I charged £1 an episode, because that'd obviously be, I'd have £15 million. Obviously, I'm aware that I wouldn't have had that many listens if it was £1. But imagine if I'd had like £1 million. It'd be a lot. But no, I made that joke, obviously aware that it's irrelevant. I love how we keep it free by having sponsors rather than anything else. But a few people did ask if they could donate some money. They said you should have a donate button where people can chip in £1 here and there. And it's like, I kind of said that's what the Patreon is. It's only $1 a month. So if you want to donate $1 a month because you dig it, then go right ahead. But you don't have to. As said, the reason I have sponsors on here is to keep it free for you guys. And here every week. And I was also delighted. Adam Buxton had his 100th episode recently. And in the outro, he gave a little thank you to me for some of the conversations that we had early on. I kind of, a few technical and behind the scene bits I helped him out with and gave him some advice and guidance on. So that was beautiful to get a thanks there. I wasn't expecting that at all. I emailed Adam about it and it couldn't be clearer that I'm just a massive fan of his podcast, because I emailed him an hour or two after the podcast came out. So that's how swiftly I listen. I think it's fantastic. So, and I can't remember, I discussed on another podcast, it was bizarre to me when I was helping out Adam with some bits, because Adam's one of the reasons I got into podcasting. But of course, Adam and Joe's podcast was highlights of their XFM show and their Six Music show. So they weren't actually making podcasts and they weren't uploading and distributing and pushing. They were part of another company each time. But yeah, it was a surreal thing to have someone who was the reason I started mine a few years down the line coming to me for advice on podcasts. And it was like, this is very strange. But yeah, I love Adam's podcast. His 100th episode is fantastic. It's with Louis Theroux and Joe Cornish. Both amazing people. Joe Cornish and Adam Buxton, of course, previous Distraction Pieces podcast guests, so go back and check those episodes out. I'll leave it there, I think. Is there anything else I need to tell you? I've mentioned the club night, haven't I? I've mentioned next week's guest. SpeechDevelopmentRecords.com. We should, when this one goes out, we should have just topped up on the sunglasses. Don't quote me on it, though, because they always seem to just sell out as soon as I put them in stock anyway. So if you want some and they're not in stock, pop your name on the email list. It's all over at speechdevelopmentrecords.com. But yeah, I'm not going to hard sell any of that to you. Just going to let you know where it is. And if you want to stroll down that avenue, then you're always welcome. You'll be greeted with a smile, some wonderful merch, and potentially a bill. Yeah, I'll see you all next week. I'm recording two more episodes this week, so they'll be up on my Patreon. The reveal of who the guests are. One is a previous guest who's been requested a ridiculous amount of times, and one is a brand spanking new guest who I've been talking to for ages about coming on, and then I got hit up by a PR company to say, would you have this person on? And I was like, yeah, I've been asking him to come on for ages. They're my mate. So that's exciting. Excited for all of these things. There's a few other things I'm excited about at the moment, but I'm not going to say anything. Just going to leave it at that. I will see you all next week. This has been the Distraction Pieces podcast with Connie Huck of Switch Off podcast on BBC Sounds. Ta-ta.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.